I'm Bruce Norris, and I'm here speaking with Doug Van Soest. Doug's been a client of the Norris Group, borrowing money, and I see his smiling face come in the office now and again. And Doug, I know probably the least of your history than a lot of other people, just because it's I've been around them for a longer period of time. So let's talk about prior to real estate. Tell me what you did. What did you do for a living before you became a real estate investor?
Well, I've had many jobs. I've done many things. So right before real estate investing, I was an appraiser. Actually became a real estate appraiser in 2003, and all the way, I just let my license go last year. So I had that license all the way up through 2012 or 13, whatever it was.
Were your other jobs connected to real estate?
Say that again?
Go ahead. Go ahead and tell me about your other jobs then.
Oh, well, yeah, that was kind of my first job in real estate. But prior to that, my wife and I had, we were kind of entrepreneurial. So we had, if you've heard of kettle corn, I assume, if you've ever been to a carnival or a fair.
Uh-huh.
We had our own kettle corn business. And we saw a friend doing that when we were in college there in San Diego, and said, that's what we want to do. So we moved to Colorado Springs, lived in my brother's basement, and started selling kettle corns at farmers market and fairs. And eventually we were selling kettle corn at the Broncos games and the Air Force Academy games, and we built this nice little concessions business. We did that for a couple of years. Just prior to coming back to California and becoming an appraiser.
And you did that right out of college?
Yeah, well, in college, right out of college, actually, I became a recruiter for the college that I went to. And we went to, my wife and I both went to a small Christian school in San Diego. And literally just for 1 year, I worked as a recruiter. She was teaching history. She's 21 years old, and she's teaching 11th grade history, and is basically, and she was a psychology major, so she's kind of staying one step ahead of the students as she's studying and knowing what to teach them the following day. But
yeah,
she did that for a year. She did that for a year, and that's right about that time I quit, and we moved to Colorado and began our entrepreneurial lives, if you will.
Did you come from when you were being raised? Did you come from that type of background? How did the breadwinner make a living in your family?
Not really. When I was young, both my parents were teachers. And then as I was growing up, they made one career move during my time growing up, and kind of joined the family business, which is a farm and ranch business in New Mexico. And my dad and mom both still work for the family business. And that's been, 30 years ago. So not really, not necessarily, a lot of job changes are real entrepreneurial, but they've always been kind of supportive of me in that realm.
What was their expectation? What was the message you got? So when you grow up and graduate from high school, this is what you're probably going to do.
It was always find a career path that you love. Make that
work
your major
for somebody
in college.
Else or yourself.
It was me. They were very encouraging to do what you want to do, but make a choice, pick it. Get a job in there, and then you'll be good the rest of your life.
Okay.
Which that's just kind of all I had really knew or really heard. It wasn't bad advice, I don't think, but I was always the kind of person where they finally made me choose a major in college because I just couldn't decide what to do. I was sort of all over the place, and so I chose a major that was pretty broad. It was business communications and kind of encompassed a lot of different classes of general ed that I'd already taken.
So why the appraisal business after kettle corn?
Well, when we moved back to California, actually one of my wife's friends was an appraiser, and she connected with him after moving back to San Diego. And, you know, I have to back up a little bit, because while we were doing the kettle corn stuff, we had read Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Okay.
So that kind of lit a fire in us about real estate.
Okay.
And we kind of had always sort of wanted to get in this business ever since that time, which was right around, you know, 2001. And so that was in the back of our minds. And then when we came back to San Diego, had an option to do something else, started looking into the appraisal business because her friend was that, and then, you know, the rest is history.
So when did you actually start becoming an investor?
We bought our first house to flip in 2008.
Wow. Okay.
August of 2008.
Did you buy rentals or before that, or a residence?
While we were in Colorado doing kettle corn, we bought a fourplex. This is after Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We get an idea and we just want to do it. So we read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and my wife's on a plane to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we buy a fourplex in Albuquerque. This is, you know, 2001 or 2002, right in there. And I never did see that property, ever. She bought it. It was, two units were vacant the entire time we owned it. Luckily, the market was really doing well in Albuquerque at that time. And after we had moved back to San Diego, we owned it about a year and a half, and we sold it for, you know, $60,000 or $70,000 more than we paid for it. And
that's a good enticement to continue that.
Exactly. We got a little taste of this and said, hey, there's something here. We need to learn more about this kind of thing. And started reading lots of books, and one of the books suggested that you get a job in real estate in some way, just to kind of learn the industry. So that sort of prompted appraisal as well.
Okay. So in 2008, you start. So you really missed all the damage in a sense that you didn't have a bunch of properties that went down. You entered the fray after or during the first serious year of decline.
We really, unknowingly, our timing was actually pretty good, because when we started flipping houses was 2008, when, you know, it was still falling, but we were very aware of the fall. And thanks to you and other, you know, education we'd been getting up to that point. The only damage we took was with our own personal residence that we had bought in 2005. So we still own that house.
Okay. Well, hopefully you can get out of that one pretty soon, or you just want to live in it. That's
we actually are renting it. We have another home that we bought at the bottom, but we're hoping that one, you know, it's getting closer to being, close to what we want it.
what's interesting about what you repetitively say something that no one else has said. We. So
yeah, we.
In this business, you are a we.
We are. I always say it is a we. I would not be doing this business if it weren't for Andrea, my wife. We're a partnership in a lot of ways. I do, you know, most of the legwork, most of the groundwork, and everything. But she, you know, she's a right hand wingman who is very supportive and does some aspects of our business still, even though we're raising three young kids. So she's pretty busy there, but. Yeah, it's very much a we.
Okay. What was your biggest weakness that you had to overcome when you got in the business?
Biggest weakness. The biggest challenge, I guess, that we had getting into the business was buying that first house. We probably made offers for a better part of 13 months before we...
Wow.
Bought anything. Started trying to buy a house in the summer of 2007, and jumped around a couple of different strategies, trying different things. I don't know how many offers exactly we actually made, and this is primarily making offers on REOs and short sales.
Okay.
Until we finally got that first acceptance of our offer in August of 2008. So that was a challenging time because that's over a year of not buying anything.
You were making a living the other way, so.
I was appraising houses, so I was making a living appraising houses. So we did have an income at the time, but we were definitely set on making this business work and trying different things and just kept going until finally we got something. That was a good day.
That's a good day. I still remember how throwing my keys very high in the air on my first purchase.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, this has now gone from theory to reality. That was a big deal.
Yeah, that's very much how it felt. I mean, because we're making offers that, because I was an appraiser, I had a pretty good idea of values, and we're making them at 50, 60 cents on what they will eventually sell for at that time because the market was falling so much.
Yeah,
and
that's pretty scary.
I knew
time you couldn't get aggressive. That's for sure.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and so once we got that yes, I mean, we just knew that was going to be a winner one way or another. Yeah, it was a good day. We were actually on our way to the airport to go celebrate our anniversary when when they called us with the acceptance, so we had to swing by the bank and get a cashier's check first and send that in.
Do you have a written set of goals?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Really?
Very important. Yeah, we revise them a lot, but...
it's a we set of goals?
Well, I mean, my wife and I for our business and personal life.
Okay.
Usually annually we'll definitely towards the beginning of the year in January we'll set the goals for that year and write them out, put them on the mirror so you see them every day. Revisit it from time to time and maybe alter it, change it a little bit so it's not, set in stone, but it's definitely goals to look for, and that's been a big part of what we do.
What would you say your most important activity is every day?
Most important daily activity? I guess if I had to boil it down to something, it's making offers.
We're
not going to buy any houses if we don't make offers, so that's pretty important.
So,
we can do all the busy work
need
to.
You're making offers off of what type of how is that you're getting a response from owners, or you're still looking in the MLS? So how is that? You're writing
today,
an offer because of what?
That's directly to an owner, 95% of the time for us today.
Okay.
So we're reaching out to individual people who own property in various ways, doing direct marketing. And so when I'm making an offer, it's not to a bank anymore. It's to, Joe Smith, who owns a rental property that they just had an eviction on, or somebody who just inherited that property, or even just somebody who is an owner-occupant who responded to one of our, marketing pieces. Everybody gets an offer. So we're not going to buy anything if we don't make an offer.
Do you enjoy that process of talking to people?
I do. I do. I guess I consider myself a people person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like talking to people. I like to just kind of get to know them. And usually, by the end of a transaction, I've got another friend. That usually is how it works out. That's the transition from, buying bank-owned homes to this is night and day difference. But I like it because of that people aspect. You get to interact with more people and talk to a real human and try to negotiate something that works as a win-win situation rather than just making an offer to this,
like,
machine.
A numbers game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was becoming financially independent one of those goals, and why is that? If it is, why is that important to you?
It is indirectly. I mean, more so the lifestyle independence, meaning we want the flexibility to. My wife and I, we want to be able to do what we want to do in life with our time, and the financial being financially free, I think is a one means to help make that happen.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily about a certain number in our bank account that we're looking for. It's more about the freedom and peace of mind. Yeah.
How would you define wealthy then?
When I don't really know, I hadn't thought about that, but probably when, you know, money doesn't control you. When that number that's in your bank account isn't what you have to think about every day.
Okay.
So
is one of your goals to have cash flow coming from real estate to take care of that?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. So you hold some rentals and on your way to flipping properties as well?
Yeah, we've bought over 150 properties, and we have 42 rental properties at the moment.
That's a huge pile.
That, you know, our initial goal was 10 rental properties. That's what we want. And, you know, we blew past that, and okay, then it's 25. Well, then we passed that, and now our goal is 50, and we're getting closer. So we just kind of keep expanding it, and the cash flow is definitely one, a major part of actually the goals for this entire business.
What's the end goal for those properties? Is that something, let's say, you feel like a peak of market is approaching? Is that something that you plan to exit or pay off some of them, or what would be your exit plan?
That's something we aren't really sure of yet, actually.
Okay.
If that's okay to say, we've always kind of thought that we would, Mike Cantu and is one of the guys I really listen to and respect, and I always liked his approach to it, and that the idea of just owning free and clear properties as your a cash flow forever. It's sort of how we went into this thinking that way, and that's still there, but we are throwing around the option of potentially selling some properties and exchanging into maybe a different asset class, like apartment buildings or things of that nature, a little bit more passive than managing individual homes. I think what will happen is maybe become a combination of both of those, keeping some free and clear rentals of our own, and then having other asset classes that also bring in income.
Well, you guys are really a success story. You really are. Why do you think you've been successful when so many other people try and they don't succeed?
Well, we owe a lot of that to you, Bruce. I mean, your training and your education. But I would say, we're not smarter than anybody else out there. I don't feel that way. I think we just are very persistent and we don't quit. When we just, like I think I mentioned before, when we decide we're going to do something, we kind of go all in. and figure out a way to make it work.
I like who I've gotten to associate with in this business, because that to me is a common theme of people that succeed. I've done that myself, and I didn't take the slow path to getting myself up to my eyeballs, but for me that's how I learn the best. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people, is that they're just built that way, that they're going to make some mistakes, but they're going to fast forward the learning curve. And,
exactly.
And for you guys, I mean, you've had a lot of transitions go on. This has really been on steroids. Okay, going from REOs. Okay, let's pretend we don't have any more REOs, so let's don't foreclose on anything. And then to the short sale world, and then to the calling directly to people. I mean, that's been a pretty fast transition, and very different skill level. Because when you're buying REOs, you're not talking to a soul really, other than you maybe get a relationship with the REO agent themselves. But when you're talking to people directly, that's a whole different deal.
Yeah, I was scared to death when the phone first rang off of a few mailers we sent out. You know, kind of like I am now on this phone with you. I'm stumbling all over my words, and I don't know what to say. And I'm, you know, you got a house? Want to sell it?
I don't think people like slick. I think people like honest.
I found that to be true.
Jim Rohn said that one time. He says, we've all learned to dance with the slick. He said, we're all susceptible to the honest. And I think, you know, you come across as, you know what, I'm going to talk to you about your real estate, and you're not going to feel that I could harm you in any way. And that's very disarming. If it's true, then you're rewarded with trust. That's why you're successful. That's a big deal. That's why you're on the panel, by the way. You're a good guy.
Well, thank you.
And somebody in the audience is going to go, yeah, I don't have any of these exceptional tools, but I do have persistence, and I can give something my all for as long as it takes. Yeah, that's been a common theme. You know, that's what's fun about talking to people that are successful in this business, is I felt like I would get to different paths, but with the same intensity. And that's the one thing that's been replicated. There isn't a give up spirit in anybody on that panel.
Yeah, there can't be.
No,
in my opinion. Yeah.
And usually that moment where any reasonable person would quit is the difference between who ends up getting what they want and the people that don't. And so it's not even a reasonable request that you continue. So you waited 13 months to buy a house.
Yeah.
You know, why didn't you say, well, this isn't working?
I easily could have. and we, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that we almost didn't. There were times where it's just you're banging your head against the wall, and how many I'm thankful for the agents that were helping us out at that time. I mean, how many offers are you going to make for us before we, you know, make you some money here?
I think because you're, you know, a likable and honest guy, that's they probably wanted to hang. That probably makes sense. I think it's been, I've learned more than anybody doing these interviews. It's been a lot of fun, and I think why the panels are the way they're arranged, you know, I mean, you're a newcomer that's become very successful. We have people like Jack Fullerton that's been doing it for their entire lifetime that brings a different set of experiences and say, this is the reward for doing it, you know, and also if I had to do it over again, maybe I'd do something different with it. And then there's a panel of just women. Because they're, for most of the women on the panel, there's not a we.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for you, it seems like the we part, I think that brings something special to a panel, because not everybody gets supported, first of all.
Right.
And it's common that those two, you know, somebody pursuing the real estate, although they have support of somebody, don't have a partner. In that sense, where that's a real participant as far as daily, there's that going on. Every couple is different, so there's not a right or wrong way, but there'll be a couple in the audience going, oh, that's definitely us. And that'll be fun.
Yeah, well, I think that gave, you know, us an advantage. I mean, two of us with, and our skill sets kind of complement each other.
You know, I like that spirit too. When I get asked all the time, because you know, I'll speak and I'll say, you know, we discovered, and I'll be talking about a report like California Crash or something, and then somebody always asks me, well, who's the we? And I don't view that as a me. Yeah, I actually wrote the document, but there's a lot of we that got me to that point. You know, there's a lot of support in having a company like the Norris Group and everything. So. I like using the term we, because it's the correct definition. It's been a wee progression, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt. And of course that we could even expand that into everybody who's helped us along the way, with education or a tip here and there, or just, you know, going out to lunch and sharing your knowledge or all those kind of things. I mean, I certainly did not do this on our own.
What's fun too, Doug, is that you're raising three children that are going to look at a very different box than you were given. You were given a lot of good tools. You're going to give your kids a bigger box because of what you've risked and what you will have attained. And so you're creating legacy. That's what's cool about this, is that
cool.
That's, and they are going to stand on that big box and they're going to make their own decisions. But the box that they are standing on is a pretty impressive one, and it's built the right way. So you're raising kids with some good futures, would be my guess.
Well, so we're trying not to ruin them on real estate. There was a time where they would say, "Where are we going? Not to see another stinky house, right?"
Yeah.
So we're not gonna
I definitely have some of, yeah, my older sons are going, "Yeah, you wouldn't believe the houses my dad had us working on when I was 13. All right, Doug, we're out of time. Thanks so much for taking time to call, and I'm really excited you're part of the panel. Thanks for being willing to do that.
Well, thank you, Bruce. It's such an honor. I really, really do appreciate the opportunity. I'm really excited about it.
All right, Doug. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
All right.